This is Digital Story Podcast number 549, September 13th, 2016. Today's theme is iPhone 7 and the Age of Smartphones. I'm Derek Story. No doubt that initially the rise in smartphone photography was due to convenience. Having a camera integrated into a connected device made it easy to send and share pictures, especially when practically every person we know is online. But we've gone way beyond simple convenience into truly capable cameras, and with no end in sight. I talk about iPhone 7 specifically and smartphone photography in general on today's show. Well, here I am, and my case, live from Maui in the Hawaiian Islands here. And, you know, this is a good time for me to do this show as I record this in a room, in my room, actually, because we've been using our iPhones all week. And we've had a variety of activities, and there are three of us that are actively using our phones for photography, the two boys and myself. So we have an iPhone 5S, we have an iPhone 6, and an iPhone 6S. And we are using these devices in really very different ways. So what I want to do for today's show is talk about smartphone photography because, you know, what I'm seeing as I'm here on vacation and as I'm observing the other folks that are on vacation, the tourists and locals alike, is really watching and observing how they use their devices and what devices they are using. For example, I haven't seen a whole lot of DSLR activity the whole time that I've been here. I see an occasional Nikon or Canon, usually with a telephoto lens, sometimes with a tripod, most often with a whole lot of other gear. In other words, they're just not walking around with a DSLR in their hand. They are carrying their DSLR and just about everything else they have photographically with them. But those are definitely the minority and not the majority of what I'm seeing in terms of people, you know, capturing their various activities. So iPhones and smartphones in general are definitely the most popular items here, but that doesn't mean that they don't have their limitations. And that leads me into the announcement about iPhone 7 and some of the things that's going to happen with the next generation of iPhone. Now, I'm going to talk specifically about the iPhone 7 today, but we all know that Samsung and the other phone makers have either done this stuff already or are in the process of doing it. So even though I'm talking about the iPhone, I'm really talking about all the latest smartphones. But I want to take a look at what Apple announced with the iPhone 7 because to me, it really seemed like this update, other than the water-resistant technology, was really about the camera. And I'm not counting losing the headphone jack as a feature. Okay. So let's start out with the iPhone 7, and then I'm going to circle back around to smartphone photography in general. Okay, by now I'm sure many of you are familiar with the specifications announced with iPhone 7. Of course, we're going to see the actual device here real soon. It's already been used to photograph a U.S. Open golf tournament and Sunday night, the opening Sunday night NFL football game. And those images look pretty good, as we would expect. But let's run through the specifications because really, I mean, we're talking about a smartphone here, but let's just listen to some of this. 12 megapixel backside illumination sensor with f1.8 aperture. Optical image stabilization, and this will be on both the 7 and the 7 Plus. Six element lens, quad LED true tone flash, sapphire crystal lens cover, hybrid IR filter, live photos with stabilization, improved local tone mapping, auto HDR for photos, photo and video geotagging, 4K video recording at 30 frames per second, 1080p HD video recording at 30 or 60 frames per second, slow-mo video support for 1080p at 120 frames per second, and 720p at 240 frames per second, time-lapse video with stabilization, cinematic video stabilization, 1080p and 720p, and then you can take 8 megapixel still photos while recording 4K video. Now, just the fact that I'm saying while recording 4K video, and we are talking about a smartphone, even over the course of the last few years, I mean, 4K video, well, first of all, HD video, right? But then 4K video on a smartphone, and then we can frame grab 8 megapixel still photos out of that. I just want to stop right there for a second and just ponder that we are talking about our phones doing this, right? And, you know, and then some of the other modes that they talked about where we're able to create soft background. And then on the Plus model, it's going to have basically two cameras, a telephoto and a wide angle camera that will work together. It seems seamless to you. You're not, to you, it doesn't feel like you're working with two cameras because the technology, you know, blends the functionality into what feels like one camera. So there is a lot of stuff going on here. And if you were to just think about the specs that I've talked about and the features that I've discussed, you would think that this is a camera, a regular camera, not a smartphone that has a camera in it, but just a straight up camera. What's interesting to me is that as a photographer, I still don't see it that way. I still see it, for me, as a multifunctional device that has a camera as one of those functions. And I think the reason why I look at it like that is because the phone definitely feels like a phone more than a camera, by the way that we operate it, by the way the screen looks when we're working in bright sunlight, by the lack of buttons and dials, you know, to operate the device, to operate the camera. You know, things like standard exposure compensation, where it's not really metered out by -1, -2, -3, or +1, +2, +3. You know, we are tapping and sliding up and down until we kind of get the exposure that we want. But we really don't know, you know, using the standard camera application anyway, you know, how much exposure compensation that we're doing. If you have auto plus HDR, it's taking one of each if you save them separately, which I recommend. But we don't really know exactly how much, you know, shadow and highlight recovery is being applied to any particular shot. So it's a bit of a black box. And I think as a photographer, because it is a bit of a black box, that still sort of keeps it in the smartphone all-purpose device technology camp as opposed to a straight-up camera. Now, that being said, I'm going to tell you about a moment that I had with the 6S on this trip. 90% of the time, I have another camera in my pocket. Most of the time on this trip, it has been the Olympus TG4. And I'll talk a bit more about that in when I talk about how we're all using the iPhone a little differently. I didn't have it with me at a particular moment. I think we had gone down to the bar to have a drink and just had my iPhone in my shorts, and that was it. My sunglasses, my iPhone, you know, we're just hanging out. It's Maui, right? The lighting got really nice, and at some point I went down to the beach, and I was just sort of walking around enjoying twilight, or the approaching twilight. And there was a great shot there. There's a shot that I really wanted. And I didn't think twice about pulling out the iPhone, lining up the shot, and shooting it. And to tell you the truth, I didn't even think, gosh, I wish I would have had my other camera, or my film camera, or my TG4, or my Micro Four Thirds camera. I didn't really think about any of that. I just thought, wow, I'm really glad I have my iPhone here so I can capture the shot. So I went ahead and recorded the shot. Actually ended up putting it up on Flickr. I think I did it on Instagram also. And, you know, it's done fantastic. It's done really well, and I really don't think that most people, unless they looked at the metadata, would have thought, wow, that is a nice iPhone shot. I think they would have thought, wow, that's a nice shot. In that sense, these devices have really taken us to that point where the viewer doesn't know what we captured it with. A lot of times, they really won't be able to tell. It just looks like a good photograph. And going back to the iPhone 7 here, you know, they are putting things into this camera to make it even more photographic in the sense that allowing us to soften the background, which is something that, you know, we haven't been able to do easily anyway with small sensor cameras. So they're giving us things like that. They're improving the color of the images. You know, that's part of the technology they're building into iPhone 7. You know, shadow and highlight detail just keep getting better and better. The lenses keep getting better and better. Low light shooting, which is something they're talking a lot about with iPhone 7, is getting better. And they had to do that because the other camera manufacturers were actually really nosing ahead with low light shooting with their smartphones. So low light shooting is something that people want. It looks neat, you know, nightlife and having your phone with you while you're doing those sort of activities. You want shots, and you want shots that look good, and you want shots that are artistic. Improving the flash. This True Tone flash is really a terrific idea. This is something that I'm surprised that we're not seeing more of on the regular camera manufacturing side, where you use two different colored LEDs to illuminate the shot. Now, the LEDs that I use in the studio, in the LEDs, you know, the panels that I use for recording video, and I use them for still photos now too. Those two-color LED panels where you have a dial that allows you to blend warmer or cooler until you find exactly the tone that you want. Well, the iPhone essentially has that too. Now, you don't have as much control over the blending, or at least I haven't seen that yet. I don't actually have an iPhone 7 in my hands, so I haven't actually seen that yet. You know, what they're doing is they're handling that for you. They're reading the ambient light, and then they're producing a light out of the LED that would be very pleasing for skin tones under those conditions. Just like everything else, Apple's doing a lot of the work for us, a lot of the heavy lifting, and basically what we're doing is we're composing the shot and we're tapping on the button. However, you still have to be impressed with, you know, what is going on here. And even though I would like to have more control over the flash, and who knows, I may have more control over the flash when I actually get to test an iPhone 7. But the fact that they're thinking along these lines is very impressive. So this reminds me of when serious photographers, when professional photographers and serious enthusiast photographers really started to embrace compact cameras. And they started looking for compact cameras that had more features so that they could travel light and they could have something in their pocket all the time, but yet they were able to create the sort of images that they want. Now, when they got these compact cameras, they weren't getting rid of their SLRs. This is in the film days. They weren't getting rid of their SLRs. They were keeping their SLRs and using their SLRs most of the time. However, they wanted this other camera for those times that they didn't have their SLRs with them. For people who are serious about photography, the iPhone and the other advanced smartphone cameras have really occupied that space for us. And I don't know any of my photographer friends who don't take pictures with their smartphone at one time or another. And then I know some people that are very serious about photography that shoot with their smartphones all the time. Maybe not every time, but a lot of the time. And so I think smartphones have really, you know, taken that space. The thing about them that's different than when we had compact cameras before, and this is where I think the comparison breaks down a bit, is that we still had to do the regular process with the film out of the compact cameras before that we had to do with our SLRs. With iPhones now, not only can you take the picture and capture a very nice shot, thanks to all the work that Apple's doing under the hood with these things, but we can also further edit them with a variety of applications. And then we can also publish those shots. We can send them off and make a postcard. We can make prints. We can carry a little printer in our pocket that's, you know, not much bigger than a deck of cards, and output prints right on the spot. We can do all sorts of stuff with these that go way beyond what the compact cameras could do before. And I think this is a real key to their popularity, is that not only do they take very good pictures, not only are they convenient, but they really do a lot of stuff because of the powerful computers that are inside and the wonderful software that goes with them. Now, taking this back to tourists, and what I'm seeing is that most folks, as you would guess, and you're probably seeing the same thing, right, are relying on their smartphones for the bulk of their vacation pictures. In my particular entourage here, the boys, they're both 19, they're shooting exclusively with their iPhones. We've got, you know, something that's very popular here on the island right now are these lanyards that you can hang around your neck, and they're waterproof. And so you can slide, and they make them, you know, for iPhones, and some of them are kind of like too big, and they're just like these zipper pouches, but the ones that we have were actually made for iPhones. And so you can slide the iPhone into them, you seal them up, they have a port for the camera, and you can operate these things when you're around water. And so I know the new iPhone, the iPhone 7, of course, is water resistant, and you can operate it around water. But these we can operate right now around water. And having these lanyards, you know, has allowed the boys to use their iPhone in even more situations than they could before. We went parasailing, and a part of the parasailing ride is that, you know, the captain brings you down and he dips you in the water and then he brings you back up. That's part of the excitement of it, right? Then you go up way high and then you're down. Well, you know, you still have to, you know, hang on to the harness. You know, your hands 90% of the time have to be occupied. So having these lanyards hanging around your neck with a phone right there that you could pick up and grab and do some shots when you need it. And when you need to let go of it, you could just let go of the phone, right? Because it's on a lanyard around your neck, and grab the harness again. You know, that's really neat. And iPhones and smartphones in general are really set up well for this. You know, imagine, you know, trying to manage your DSLR while you're parasailing. It's, I mean, if you parasail all the time, I'm sure you know, you can manage this. There's a rig you could come up with or something. But for those of us that just do this stuff on occasion, that seems like a really bulky, difficult thing to manage. The slimness of these smartphones and, you know, their adaptability just makes them really terrific for situations like this. So, yeah, you got a lanyard hanging off your neck. It's waterproof. You get dipped in the water, not a problem. You need to grab the harness, not a problem. When you have a moment, you can shoot shots. And they were actually, and this gets in now to the connectivity of these things, they were actually FaceTiming their friends while they were 800 feet in the air parasailing. They were having FaceTime conversations with their friends while they're 800 feet in the air. We can't do that with anything else other than a smartphone, right? Not even your best DSLR can do that. So these things just take photography and imaging and sharing experiences to a whole new level. Same thing, Zach, today we went snorkeling out at Black Rock, which is a great place to snorkel here on the leeward side of Maui. You know, we've been there many times. Every time we come here, we go out there and we have a morning where we go for a nice snorkel swim. He's never been able to shoot video before. He doesn't want a video camera. He doesn't want a regular camera. He just wants to shoot with his iPhone. We put the thing in the lanyard. He fired up the video app while he was topside because it was easier to control. And then, you know, we dove down and he recorded video while he was swimming. Come back up topside and he could kind of control it again. It was harder to control underwater, but he could come up and control again. And he came away with some pretty good stuff, I have to say. The adaptability of these devices is fairly incredible, and especially when they're in the hands of people who are creative and who think outside the box a bit and, you know, go ahead and try things. So he came away with some video that he wasn't able to do before, just using his smartphone and a $20 accessory that you know, you hang around your neck. And this is where I'm really impressed with this technology. I doubt you'll ever hear me poo-pooing phone photography. You know probably already that I like it a lot. What's happening now is that as these phones get better, again, I don't see them as taking away from my other cameras or from the other things I want to do with other cameras. I just see them allowing me to do more things in more situations with them as I need to. Just like that moment that I had out on the beach. I hadn't planned to shoot it with my smartphone. I have other cameras, but that moment just happened. And I had the phone there, and I captured the shot, and it turned out great. In the case of the boys, you know, they have the phones. That's all they're shooting with. They want to do these different things, and there's a way to do it, and it turns out great. And I think that's wonderful. I really like that. Now, the process that I'm doing most of the time is that I'm shooting with the Olympus, the TG4, which you've heard me talk about a lot lately. You know I just love this camera. And man, is it performing like a champ. It really is. You know, and it's doing in-camera lens corrections with the JPEGs. I'm doing everything RAW plus JPEGs and comparing the two, and the JPEGs are just fantastic. Most of the time I like the JPEGs better than the RAW files. I can take it underwater. I don't need a case or anything. I can shoot video underwater. I can shoot still photos underwater. It has a fast aperture, has a great zooming range, has all the photographic controls that I want. It has a very good underwater mode so that the colors look great. And I'm using it with Wi-Fi. And so then the images are being sent to my smartphone, to the iPhone, and then going into my Photos application. So in my case, the bulk of the use of my iPhone is as a conduit in my workflow. It's a step in the workflow. Sometimes, yes, I capture like I had to, but most of the time I'm capturing with other devices and while on vacation running those images through the phone and then sending them up to, if you follow me on Instagram, if you watch our Facebook page, all that stuff, that all ran through the iPhone. So the iPhone is a great computer also, and it's a great, you know, addition to the workflow. So not only can I shoot with it, I can also use it for moving images off wirelessly from the TG4 to wherever I need to send them. This age of smartphone photography is far from peaked. I mean, there is a lot of headroom here, and these things are going to continue to evolve. And, you know, initially I wasn't thinking that I was going to get an iPhone 7. I can because, you know, I bought my iPhone through Apple now, so which means I can upgrade whenever I want to. But as I look at the specs and as I look at the versatility of these devices, I'm thinking that, you know what, why not? Why not be current? Why not take advantage of everything that these things have to offer for when I have those situations where I want to use my iPhone or where I have to use my iPhone, why not get the best shot possible? And that's a wonderful thing when you think about it as photographers, is that knowing that if the situation came up where you don't have the camera that you normally carry, you can use the iPhone and get something really wonderful. So now I'm very much leaning towards getting the new iPhone. You know, I'll deal with the whole headphone jack thing like everyone else. But I'm really thinking about it in terms of the camera and that I want the best camera in my pocket for those times that I need it. Just to put a bow on this is that I think these are very exciting times. I do not think that smartphones are going to push away the other cameras that we love. I think we can love and use the other cameras and integrate the smartphones, you know, into our photography as needed. It's just more tools in the toolbox. And I love having a full toolbox. In the news, Instagram is working on iPhone 7 specific features, and this is reported by DP Review. In one of the next versions of the app, the zoom of the iPhone 7 Plus dual camera will be controllable from the Instagram camera. In addition, the new Taptic Engine will indicate how much the photographer has zoomed into the scene in both video and stills mode. Instagram says it's also looking at adapting its image filters to iPhone 7 display's wider color gamut, which lets viewers see a wider range of color. Of course it does, right? For all iPhones, there will be a function to convert live photos into Instagram boomerang GIFs, which repeatedly play back and forth. I think that's kind of neat. I'm glad they're doing that. This function will be based on the new Live Photo API and iOS 10. The new Instagram version is expected to launch sometime after shipping of the new iPhone models has started on September 16th. So right away, Instagram is jumping on the new features that are available with iPhone 7. And we're actually getting some goodies if we don't upgrade and we stick with our iPhone 6s. So that's pretty nice. And again, as I was saying in the previous story, this is like one big thing. This is like one big glacier that's just moving down the mountain. It's not just the device itself. It's not just a new feature here or there. Everything is getting better and evolving at once, which is leading us to a whole new place in imaging altogether. And glad to see that Instagram's jumping all over this. I want these new features. I wanted to do these fun things. The Nimble Photographer Workshop coming to Portland, Oregon on November 5th. So I'm gonna be on the road again. I debuted the workshop in Chicago back in June. And the idea is with the Nimble Photographer Workshop is that we take these one-day events, and it's for folks that maybe are interested in, you know, being a part of one of our workshops, but don't necessarily have the way to travel to California, where I normally hold, you know, the longer workshops. So we come in, we do a one-day workshop. I've designed this really fun workshop. The Nimble Photographer Workshop is a blast. And we talk about nimble photography, we talk about gear, we do a photo shoot putting these techniques into place. It's really a fast-paced, fun, very enjoyable day. And I come to you. And so this time I'm coming to Portland, Oregon on November 5th. And we're working with a camera store there, Pro Photo Supply, their event center. They have a terrific place for us. We're going to provide you lunch. And it's just going to be a really fun day. And if you're in the Portland area or in the Oregon area on November 5th, I hope you sign up. You can sign up right now. We have pre-registration. It's open. There's a link in the show notes for registration. Your seat will be reserved. I'll get in contact with you. I'll help you prepare for the event to make sure you get the most out of it. I hope you can join me. I want these things to be sustainable. I want them to work because it just allows me to involve more of you in what I think is one of the best experiences in photography, which is spending time with other people that have the same passion that you do, and that includes me, in a face-to-face, hands-on experience and getting us off the internet and getting us sitting across from one another. So Portland, Oregon, November 5th, the link is in the show notes. Sign up. And let's have some fun. Let's see if we can get this thing off the ground and make it work. So let's get it going in Portland. We had a great start in Chicago. Let's keep it going and see what we can do. The Drobo Diaries. All right, well, this is the second installment of me working with the Drobo 5DT, T standing for turbo. So I got the thing unpacked. And the next step was to insert the drive. So I have five drives that go into the Drobo. And I've got 2 6 terabyte drives and 3 2 terabyte drives. So I went ahead and stacked them. I put the 2 6s on the bottom because that just seemed to make sense to me. And you know, the one thing is that when you load the drives into a turbo, make sure that you hear that click. You know, as you push them in, make sure you hear that click, because that means that they're properly locked and aligned and that they will, you know, they'll work. Now, the next step is, you know, there's software for your computer that comes with the Drobo. If you're running a Mac or Windows, it doesn't make any difference. You just get the appropriate software. Obviously, all the information comes with a drive on how to download it. But you need to install that software on your computer because the next step is to connect the Drobo, launch Drobo Dashboard, which is the software that you use. And then once it recognizes the Drobo that you have connected, it's going to ask you, do you want to set it up? Do you want it formatted? And you're going to say yes. Now, in my case, because I'm running Mac, I actually set it up as a Mac drive. And the reason why I did that is because I wanted to be able to work with Time Machine if I want to use it for that. Plus, I have legacy Aperture libraries. I have legacy iPhoto libraries. I have Photos libraries. And I have Capture One Pro libraries that were, you know, created on a Mac. And I wanted all of those to work. So I didn't want it to be Windows formatted. I wanted it to be Mac formatted, which it does quite well. So I did that next step. And it takes a little while to do that. I mean, it's, you know, there's a little bit of secret sauce with Drobos. So it got them formatted. It got everything set up. And the drive was ready to go. Once it was ready to go, I wanted to run a test copy. The plan is, if you recall, is that I'm going to copy all the important stuff that I need kind of right now over to the new Turbo Drobo. I'm going to take my existing 5D home and I'm going to keep it off-site. So then I'll have the Drobo Turbo 5DT at the studio, and then I'll have the other Drobo at home, and then that way I have things in two locations. So the first test that I wanted to run was all of my Capture One Pro catalogs, because those are really important to me and I want copies of those on both drives. So this time, which was really nice because I work with the folks now at Hedge for Mac, this was really fun. So I thought, hey, Hedge for Mac sounds like a really good piece of software for doing this file copying, because what I want is a verification of those files. In other words, when you're copying gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of stuff, you want to know that it copied correctly. You want that verification. So I thought, I'm going to use Hedge for Mac for this. And so I set that up to copy from one drive to another. Hedge handled it wonderfully. It ran a very nice and zippy, shall I say, file copying procedure. And then afterwards, it let me know that every bit of it was verified, and that way I knew then that what I had copied from one Drobo over to the other Drobo was all there. So now what I have is my Capture One catalogs on both devices. Everything's verified. I think I've got my system down. So now when I get back to the mainland, when I get back to my studio, where I'm going to pick up is I'm going to do a test with my Aperture, my legacy Aperture libraries, and iPhoto libraries, and Photos for OS X libraries. You know, those are Mac specific. I'm going to use Hedge for those. And then if those go over and if those work great, then I'm going to take the rest of the stuff. And remember, you can use Hedge regardless of what you're copying. In this case, I'm doing Drobo to Drobo, but you could have a legacy RAID drive. You could have just a big old hard drive. You could have all sorts of stuff. Hedge can handle all of those different devices and then copy them on to the Drobo. So next up is going to be Aperture and iPhoto, and we'll see how that works, and then we'll take it from there. So that is the next installment of the Drobo Diaries. So far, so good. Just make sure you get that drive set up the way that you want. Wrapping up here from Maui, I have to go get a fruity drink here, so I'm going to pull this show to a close. Well, I just wanted to remind you that the B&H and Amazon tiles on the digital store, if you're going to do any shopping on those sites, if you go to the digital store first, click on those tiles, then go to Amazon or B&H via those tiles, then just search for whatever you want. That really helps support the show, and I really appreciate that. And speaking of supporting the show, welcome to our new Patreon members. So happy to have you as part of our inner circle and so appreciate your support in independent online publishing. Folks like me that we are paying all the bills, we're doing everything ourselves. We are creating these ideas and then we are implementing them, and we really appreciate you appreciating what we're doing by supporting us through Patreon. There's a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story for Patreon. And if you decide you want to support us, we welcome you because, you know, we want to keep this thing going. And finally, I got to thank my good friends over at Red River Paper because they just gave me so much confidence when I delivered this last job. I had a big commercial job that I did for a local credit union. And, you know, I took some chances on, you know, how I processed those images. I really wanted a look that fit within their brand, but yet was very artistic. So not only did I get everything worked out in Capture One Pro before I delivered the job, I made some prints on Red River paper and really lived with them for a day just to make sure that my vision and what I thought was a good look for these images, because they're going to be used for all sorts of different marketing materials and advertising materials, just to make sure that what I thought looked good on the computer screen really was good. And having those prints spread around the studio for a day where I could pick them up, look at them under different types of lighting, under different conditions, under different frames of mind, just when I was walking around, really gave me a lot of confidence when I delivered the job. It is one of the most important aspects of having a printer for me in the studio, is doing these prints, knowing that the work I'm doing is what I think it is. And then when I send those gallery links to the client, and I know that they're going to be downloading these images, that as they use them for the different collateral that they're going to be creating, that they will also look good for them. So Red River Paper is the way to go with this. They have all sorts of different types of stocks. I tend to use, believe it or not, for these proofing jobs, I tend to use the glossy stocks and just really try to see every detail and every color nuance in these images. They have a variety of papers to choose from, a variety of sizes. If you're not doing this for the work that you share with other people, I highly recommend doing some proof prints first and then doing those proofs on Red River paper. All right, and they have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Okay, I am going to get back to my Maui frame of mind here. I'm very relaxed. I'm having a great time. I'm taking a lot of pictures. I'm enjoying my family. It's just wonderful. I appreciate you stopping by and spending this break with me. I'm going to go back to what I'm doing. Make sure you come back and join me next week. I'll be in the studio next week and working on some terrific things for you then. Until then, have a terrific week. Take some great shots yourself. Bye-bye now.